Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Crypto 101 podcast. We hope that everyone is having a fantastic day. No matter where you're coming in from, you're certainly in the right place because today we are joined by Federico Bricati. He is the head of U.S. business over at 21 Shares. He previously worked at BlackRock. Federico, welcome, and it's great to have you.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, I mean, this has to be a really exciting episode. I think no matter what kind of listener you are, whether you're deeply ingrained in the crypto space, whether you're newer, the odds are you know who 21 Shares is. And we got a lot of cool stuff that we want to talk about in today's podcast because we get to talk all about not only the state of cryptocurrency, but kind of how the world of crypto is merging with the traditional financial side of things, and even get to dive into what's happening in these Bitcoin ETFs because these have exploded onto the scenes as one of the most successful ETF launches in history. And it's cool to get someone like yourself who has experience in both sides of the industry, because a lot of the time we get people who grew up in crypto or they grew up in TradFi, but you're kind of getting the best of both worlds. So I see you almost as an intermediary of sorts. But you know, I guess before we dive into all of that, you know, just tell us about what your experience has been working in the space so far. And I guess what got you involved and kind of interested in crypto in the first place?
Yeah, great questions and a pleasure to be here with your viewership. You know, I likewise see my role as kind of like this conduit between TradFi and crypto markets, right? And actually, I think that's the role that 21 Shares is playing today. I originally got involved in, you know, Bitcoin and digital assets more broadly, just on a personal interest perspective, you know, back in college. But on a professional basis, you know, I've been actually following this from an ETF lens for quite some time. You know, we originally started seeing some ETFs pop up in Europe that had exposure to these assets, right? And 21 Shares actually was one of the first to launch these products in Zurich. But at my time at BlackRock, you know, this was one of the first things that flagged, you know, this is a growing area in the market that we should pay attention to, right? Eventually, that made its way over to Canada. So it got a little bit closer to home. And then eventually to the US market, as we all know, especially with the launch of the spot products here a couple months back.
So you said that this started in Europe first, right? That seems to be where the first steps were taken. Then it was Canada. Now we're seeing it in the United States. You know, would you say at this point that it's kind of becoming a truly, like it already was a global asset, but from a traditional financial standpoint, would you say that it is very quickly becoming a global financial asset on that front as well?
Oh, absolutely. You know, if I think about it from the merging of the digital asset world and the traditional finance world, we started in Zurich and we had a couple of products launched, you know, in our first year of operations. It's been six years since we launched our firm. And now we have over 50 products and over 16 global markets coverage, right? So yes, Canada, yes, US, yes, Europe. But it's actually a worldwide phenomenon for sure.
You know, out of all those markets, I guess, which ones are you seeing having the most interest in crypto, or is it all pretty even?
I would say it's all pretty even. I think that I'm very biased, you know, and I come here as the head of the US business. So I would say that my market is the most interested. But look, regardless of the continent that we talk about, there's some strong signs of interest and adoption that we can point to.
You know, I've got to ask, what has stood out to you the most about seeing the world of TradFi and DeFi kind of meet here?
It's interesting. I get this question a lot from 21 Shares colleagues and also from some prior BlackRock colleagues that are kind of checking in on, you know, how this move went. And, you know, the disappointing or the realistic answer from my experience has been they're quite similar, actually. There's a lot of surface level differences, you know, if you talk about, you know, what people wear to work and you know, what type of people work in different types of institutions. But at the end of the day, and especially if you look under the hood, the goals are quite similar. The way that we focus on serving clients is very, very similar. And the way that we even talk about our products and that we go to market, all of these things are actually quite well aligned. And so from my perspective, you know, it's different terminology. It's different, you know, surface level cultural differences. But outside of that, it's actually quite similar.
Yeah, you know, it feels like from the conversations that I have that people are kind of approaching one side of the extreme, where it's either you meet people from TradFi and they're like, oh, I can't stand crypto. You know, I thought that died out a couple of years ago. And they're not just really aware of what it's become. Or it's the opposite, where you start to see people take this like Larry Fink approach, where they're opening up to this idea. And they're like, actually, after looking into this, we see the huge potential of value that this could have. And I will say, you know, at least in recent years, especially as TradFi adoption has grown to the way that it has, I've seen a lot more people leaning towards kind of Larry Fink standpoint. We're saying, hey, you know, I didn't really care about it in the past. I had no reason to. Now I have done my own research into it, and I actually see a place for this, which I think has been really cool. And that kind of seems to be just like the way that the narrative is slowly shifting.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more, you know, and I think we kind of hit this critical, you know, turning point from an asset class perspective, where it got to the place where most investors at this point can't afford not to be participated in the asset class. And so hearing a Larry kind of be a spokesperson for the industry and for the product suite more broadly is very reassuring to most investors, right? And we're seeing a lot of that demand kind of start to boil up both from retail investors and also come down from the top from the institutional side of things.
Mm. So what do you think the turning point was for TradFi's acceptance and kind of adoption of the crypto markets? Because for years, it felt like they were almost against them. You know, maybe they saw it as competition. Everyone kind of has their own opinion there. But all of a sudden, in the last 2 years, kind of in the midst of the bear market, there was this spark. There's always been a bit of institutional adoption, and we've seen that in the mm-hmm. past. Mm-hmm. But what was that like turning point?
Look, we could point to a lot of different moments, whether it's, you know, the approval of the futures ETFs or the spot ETFs or, you know, BlackRock's change in stance towards this asset class as a whole. But really, I think it's been quite frankly a fast but gradual turning point that we've been kind of approaching over the last couple of years. Today in the US, there's over 50 million investors that hold some sort of digital asset. And obviously, part of that is because of the ETFs, but part of that is also because there's a lot of people that participated in this market far beyond or before these products were even available. So I think ultimately what's happening from a traditional finance perspective is you're seeing all this retail demand, and you're seeing all this interest in the asset class. Ultimately, you need to coexist with something that the end investors want and are asking for, right? And so that's a little bit of what's going on here. I think the ETFs definitely facilitate the traditional finance adoption a bit more quickly. But overall, I would say this has actually been a work in progress since, you know, the late teens.
Yeah. And your Bitcoin ETF has been around for a little over 9 months now. You know, yeah. How have you seen that stack up against maybe other ETF launches? I don't know if you have any numbers off the top of your head, but we know that it has been just wildly successful.
It has been the fourth fastest growing ETF in the history of the ETF industry. And it's only all ETFs. And it's only fourth after three other Bitcoin products, right, in terms of assets. So it's been tremendously impressive. You know, the team at 21 Inches has done a fantastic job commercializing this product and getting it in front of clients and really taking care to making sure that it's set up in a way that, you know, investors feel comfortable from an operational setup perspective, and that we can pass on as many of the benefits of the ETF to our end clients at the end of the day.
Yeah, and I think you hit on a really good point here, because there's a lot of crypto savvy people. Maybe they're listening. Maybe you're a listener and you know someone that's just super crypto savvy, and they're going, "Why would I own a Bitcoin ETF when I can just go buy it on an exchange and I can do everything myself?" And the answer there is because the ease of access. You know, just because someone knows how to do something, just because you might be crypto savvy, doesn't mean that the rest of the world is. And you have people who have been so, I guess, ingrained in the TradFi system because it's been around for forever. You know, it's what we grew up knowing, and it's what people have invested in for decades now. And now people can go to those same partners that they've used for decades of investing, and they can now get Bitcoin exposure. And I think the ability to do that and do that with someone that you're familiar with in a very easy manner is huge. Because I would say that it really opens up the potential client base of Bitcoin, and it really expands who can buy it.
Absolutely. And actually, the point that you're hitting on here is the reason that 21 Shares exists in the first place, right? Our founders are longtime friends, and their moms had asked them, I think it was back in 2016, you know, hey, I did some research on this Bitcoin thing. Like, how can I add this to my portfolio? Right. And so Hanny and Ophelia went back and kind of said, hey, there's actually no easy way to do this unless you want to start worrying about, you know, keys and storage and wallets and what have you. So that's when the first 21 shares Bitcoin ETF came to be. And it was based in Zurich originally because of ETF regulations there were a little bit more permissive. But since then, our mission has been exactly that, right? To provide easy access and convenient, low-cost, regulated products that allow all types of investors, whether you're the biggest institution in the world or a retail investor like anyone listening to the call today or to the podcast, it's a product for you, right? And the low-cost nature and the convenience of it really is the selling point.
Mm. Couldn't agree more. Yeah, I mean, there's a time and a place for this. You know, obviously, ETFs are a great tool. And if they're not for you, that's okay. You know, there's a lot of other people that they are available for. And I think just having the option to use those is powerful and it's useful.
Yeah. So. Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm in general a very big believer in the ETF as a great tool for most people to build their portfolios. And why not have digital assets in there as well?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And we're seeing a lot of chatter about that. But you know, do you see a world where crypto and TradFi, kind of DeFi and TradFi coexist together? Or do you get the sense of it's one or the other? Because for a long time, it was like, oh, it has to be just DeFi. It's going to overtake. It's going to be the future. And TradFi is going to go away. And, you know, I have to say, I'm not sure that I'm entirely of that opinion because I think that there's a role for both. But I'm curious to kind of get your thoughts.
Well, I think that's the world we live in today. Right. Yeah. We're kind of coexisting with TradFi and DeFi one along the other. I think digital assets today are really, really great for certain things, right? Like if we think about fast and efficient cross-border payments, that's a clear-cut use case where you're going to leverage DeFi platforms, right? But at the same time, TradFi is still required and needed for large parts of the economy. And so I think it'll be kind of this ebb and flow, if you will, that we're going to start to see over time. But in terms of coexistence, that's kind of the only path forward, in my opinion, here. And it's not so much about just one versus the other.
I agree. Yeah, I mean, when we look at the pros and cons of both systems, I think we have to play to the strengths of both. And there's advantages of TradFi. You know, love it, hate it, it's not perfect. You know, both are ever increasing. And that's kind of the goal here. But I think that there is a happy medium where both can coexist. And I don't know if it has to be this one or the other argument where both can still succeed, even though they're both around.
I think so too. But it all comes down to use cases, right? And how easy is it for clients to kind of go to one side or the other, right? And so I think there will be moments in time where DeFi catches up and starts doing some things better than traditional financial firms. That's definitely on the horizon, but it's not going to be an overnight switch, if you will.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, since the Bitcoin ETF, we've now seen the introduction of the Ethereum ETFs. And there's chatter out there. Everyone's like, you know, what is the next ETF going to be? Do you think that it's possible that we even see one? Because it seems to be that most of the attention and desire was around Bitcoin and Ethereum. You know, we've seen some push for a Solana one, but you know, what is the likelihood that we actually see another crypto ETF in the future? Is there even like the demand for that?
I absolutely think there is the demand for that. And I think there is I am confident in a future in which there are multiple tokens wrapped in ETFs in the United States. Yes. I think if we look at the evolution even in Europe, and we tend to use Europe as a gauge for our own business just because that's where we started. But today in Europe, we have over 40 products, all sorts of tokens wrapped in ETPs, and all sorts of strategies, whether they're levered, inverse strategies, index baskets, multi-asset products, like you name it, right? Europe has a very diverse product landscape from a digital assets perspective. And so long-term, I think that's where we'll end up in the US. But there are a couple, especially regulatory hurdles, I think, before we get there.
What goes into choosing, you know, a potential altcoin ETF? You know, I think the Bitcoin and Ethereum were kind of no-brainers, right? We're looking at the oldest, most advanced, or not most advanced, the oldest, most reliable cryptocurrencies that have been around forever. They're the two largest by market cap. Like those are kind of self-explanatory why they got the ETFs. What goes into potentially choosing the altcoin? Because I've seen a lot of people have opinion about this. Some people are saying it should be Solana because of its activity, surpassing Bitcoin and Ethereum on certain days. Other people think it should be XRP because of its capabilities. Some people think it should be Cardano. Like everyone is entitled to their own opinion here. But I'm curious from your perspective, like what are the determining factors?
Yeah, I think it's all of the above is the long story short there. And I think every token has kind of a different story in and of itself. At 21 shares, the approach that we personally take is very research driven and research based. So we have a pretty sizable research team between Zurich and New York City. And they tend to do all the underwriting for the different tokens or products that we bring to market. And so they look at exactly the metrics that you just listed, right? Like developer activity, fees, they look at number of transactions, the costs, the use cases, the scalability. These are all metrics and you know, qualifications of the tokens that we consider. And so once we kind of do our due diligence from that perspective, the second question is, okay, if we have the bullish view on the specific product, do we think there's a market fit, right? And as we've seen in the US, I think there's capacity for a lot of different tokens and a lot of different products to come to market. But again, it's going to require some time and being able to make these products available so that clients can actually come in and enjoy the benefits.
You know, all that's super cool. I think a lot of investors would be excited to see some more altcoin offerings because of the potential, I guess, just positive impact that it could have. And yeah. Speaking of positive impact, I mean, that was something that we really only got to see with the Bitcoin ETF. It wasn't mm-hmm. something that we got to see with the Ethereum ETFs, because if we're looking at the time horizon, you know, the Bitcoin ETF came out in January, it launched. The markets were pretty wild then. We got to see like a glimpse of what a full-fledged parabolic bull market could look like. And we mm-hmm. also, you know, kind of by part of that, got to see how the ETF inflows could impact price. The result mm-hmm. was that Bitcoin hit new all-time highs. It was really, really cool. Now, the Ethereum ETF hasn't been around during the same kind of period. It launched several months after. It didn't get to exist in that same window. And so I think that there's been people that have been frustrated going, you know, why hasn't the Ethereum ETF sent us to a new all-time high like it did Bitcoin? And I think the answer there is just that it wasn't around during the same stage of the market. You know, that pretty much launched after the top that we saw of 2024 came in. And it's only got to see, you know, quote unquote, some of the downsides, right? It's still been a smashing success. It's been great, but it hasn't got to exist during that kind of parabolic, euphoric bull run that people are used to. And I think that is where the most upside potential from these ETF comes, is because, again, it expands the access of who can get into these things. And when we see those large, those times of large inflows, I think that's really where the ETFs stand out. And that's some of where their strengths are.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's what's going on with the Ethereum ETFs is a mix of multiple macro forces kind of converging at once, and specific to the time that they were launched, you know, risk on assets, which is how I would think about an Ethereum product, have been volatile, right? And it's not just specific to Ethereum. It's true for all sorts of growth equity products, right? So that's been going on in the backdrop. The ETFs did launch at slower periods in the year, right? So if we think about like end of July and August, tend to be slower from a ETF flow perspective. We are expecting to see that ramp up now towards the second half or the end of 2024, as more, you know, clients come back and money market funds start seeing some outflows given interest rates are coming down. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of macro themes that have kind of been, you know, impacting the outcome from an Ethereum perspective. Now, the other thing that we haven't mentioned so far is the branding, right? I think if we compare Bitcoin and Ethereum, you know, in a silo, Bitcoin is the flag bearer for the digital assets industry. And when it comes to TradFi understanding and TradFi's knowledge of these two different products, it is much more sophisticated on the Bitcoin side. And so how do we, through education and through, you know, being close to our clients, get them comfortable with the use cases for Ethereum, which I think are extremely interesting, right? Especially from an investment perspective. And how do you get them familiarized with the product to be able to add them to their portfolios?
You know, you mentioned the TradFi side, and that's something that I've seen a lot of people talking about here recently. People are just nervous. You mentioned risk on assets. People are nervous of inflation. You know, they're nervous of the elections. They're nervous of interest rates being cut. And why is that happening for the first time in 4 years? And how that could affect the crypto markets. Is that something that, you know, you all are, you know, even worried about? Is it something that you look into? Is it something that you kind of just look at the crypto space and say, yeah, you know, They don't have a correlation. Like, I guess, what is your thought process or approach to everything that's happening?
Yeah, I think there's a difference between some of these shorter term headwinds and some of the long term, structural trends that are really in place to drive growth in this category, right? I tend to look at things out from, 2, 3, 5 year periods in time. And I don't necessarily look at price action day over day. I actually think about it more in a long term investor perspective. And to me, the fact that there is a regulatory clarity around Bitcoin and Ethereum already is a fantastic tailwind. B, these ETFs, like you mentioned earlier, are a fantastic conduit for more and more people to come into the market when the time is right. And so I think the growth that we've seen already just on the Bitcoin side, which has come in a time when it's primarily retail investors and, a subset of wealth advisors participating in that market, it's only going to be amplified as more and more parts of TradFi actually come online and allow these products to be sold to their clients. So we're only seeing kind of the tip of the iceberg, if you will. And what's exciting for me is that the rest of that iceberg is quite sizable and I think has a lot to do with our product.
Who do you think that the rest of that, quote unquote iceberg, where is a lot of that pressure and inflows going to come from? Is it from like institutions? Is it from RIAs? Is it from retail?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's going to come from multiple places. And we tend to subdivide the world, the US asset management or wealth management world, into three big buckets. One is going to be retail investors, who have been the primary drivers of these flows so far. Second is going to be wealth advisors, which are the largest part of the US asset management market and actually a part of the market that is what I would call below the iceberg level and what we're not really seeing yet. And then there's institutions and asset owners like pension funds or endowments, which are only just starting to dip their toe in the water as well. And so when I think about the next 3 years of flows, I definitely think retail will continue to be participating in this market, especially as education continues, product innovation continues to develop. And we will continue to kind of lean on that firepower that retail brings and that enthusiasm for this asset class. But the biggest driver of flows, undoubtedly, in my opinion, is going to be the wealth advisory world. So if you think about the big wirehouses, the big RIAs, as they allow their advisors to start selling these products to their clients, that's going to completely change the game and scale the level of flows that we see in these products to a whole different level. If I think about the US ETF market as a whole, we're on track to reach over, potentially $1 trillion in NNA this year, which is a number that's impossible to comprehend, but is really encouraging from a market participant perspective, right? Clearly, there's demand for these types of products out there.
Do you think that the average ETF holder is more long-term focused or short-term focused?
The average ETF holder, from what we've seen, and it varies by category and product strategy, of course. But if you think about the majority of mainstream ETF investors and the majority of mainstream strategies, these are buy and hold clients, and I think that applies especially to the digital asset category. As evidenced a couple of weeks back when we saw that Monday where, all of a sudden there's all these concerns coming out of Japan and, the US numbers didn't look great. Market starts to sell off on Monday, but actually these ETFs performed fantastically. First off, from an operational perspective, there was no hiccups. But secondly, there was no outflows from clients. We didn't see any panic selling. So it's pretty incredible to know that you have a retail client base that's passionate about this product and is continuing to hold despite the near-term turbulence. And what that tells me is that the ecosystem and the digital asset industry as a whole has done a pretty good job about educating investors about the short-term risks that are and volatility, right, that's associated with this asset class.
Yeah, that has to be a big benefit of these ETFs is if the bulk of these holders are more long-term focused, the more that hold them, the more that would incentivize, in theory, appreciation, because they're not people who are willing to sell on a whim. And you said you saw that in some of these sell-offs from the Japanese carry trade. And that's all a good sign, because essentially what that means is that Bitcoin is being removed from supply and it's being stored for long term. People that aren't saying, hey, if the price of Bitcoin is $60,000, they're not interested in selling at 65. They're not interested in selling at 67. And they're not trying to day trade or swing trade these things. These are people who are seemingly much more interested in playing for years or potentially decades. And I think that that's a good thing for the crypto industry is to have more long-term holders.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's good for investors as a whole, right?
Yeah.
And when we think about the long-term trajectory of this asset class, you know, our current, you know, price point is a fantastic entryway for those investors that are going to stick around for years, or if not decades, to your point, especially if it's in a retirement account, right? So there's all sorts of benefits, I think, to both clients and into the industry broadly, to having more buy and hold clients.
You know, what do you think that the next couple years look like? Like, we've had a fantastic year, as we've talked about so much already, with these crypto ETFs. You know, do you think that they have the potential to do even better year two or year three or year five? Or is it something when we see something like this, that the first year is the biggest and best because it came out for the first time?
I think actually what we should expect is continued improvement in results for the industry on a go forward basis. Usually ETFs actually take a while to start to pick up any steam.
Wow.
They're not usually a first year story, and then they kind of fade out. Obviously, this is strategy, you know, I'm being a generalist here across strategies, but typically what we see is like past the 3 year mark is where you really start to see these ETFs scale. And so, you know, we're seeing probably somewhere around 30 to 40 billion in NNA for this category this year. The expectation will be for that to continue to go up, especially as the broader ETF industry grows and allocations towards this type of product increase by investors that aren't participating at all so far.
Yeah, I think that's great, because we were talking with Matt Hogan from Bitwise and some of the Bloomberg Intelligence guys that do a lot of the ETF work over there. And what they were saying is that a lot of risk on investors, a lot of the bigger players, they want to wait 6 to 12 months to see how everything plays out. They want to make sure that it's tried and tested. They want to make sure that it's safe. They want to see how everything pans out. They want other people to test the waters before they come in with their larger amounts of money. And then after maybe 6 to 12 months minimum, that's where we start to see some of these bigger players kind of start to dip their toes into the waters. Would you say that that's like a fair assessment?
100%. Yeah, I think that's exactly what we're expecting here, is past that year mark to see a lot of the more, the bigger wealth managers, if you will, and the UBSs, Morgan Stanleys, Merrill Lynch's of the world, to kind of start opening the gates up. And once, to your point, they've done their due diligence, they've asked all the questions that they need to ask, and they understand, you know, how these products operate really well, that's when they'll begin positioning for their clients.
Yeah. You know, we love to hear that. I think every crypto holder loves to hear that, man, we could just be getting started. The whales, so to say, could still be on the sidelines. They could still be looking at the ETF space, kind of just eyeing up the right opportunity. And, you know, at the time of making this, the crypto markets are certainly looking strong. We've been in this kind of consolidatory period for a while now, but things are feeling like they're heating up again. And I think a lot of people are waiting to see. You know, we talked about where that money could come from and how it could happen. And there really is a true, clear path to success here.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's reassuring.
Yeah, it's very reassuring. And I think there's a few things that we are going to look out over the horizon, right? And part of that is going to be these platform approvals. Part of that is going to be, you know, what happens in November here around the US elections. But again, these are mainly near-term headwinds or potential tailwinds, depends on how things turn out. But over the long term, I think that's definitely the trajectory that we expect.
You know, I guess as we wrap things up here, where do you think the greatest opportunity for the industry to develop is today?
That's a great question. I think, look, there's a couple of things, just given that this is a brand new asset class, a new category for products, right? If I think just back 5 years, you know, people were still talking about like a potential Bitcoin ban in the United States. So the trajectory that we're on right now is absolutely fantastic. I think in terms of development, it's simple, right? It's regulatory clarity, which I think the industry as a whole is kind of asking for. It's product innovation. I want to see where different issuers, ourselves included, kind of come to market with new strategies that we could get in front of clients. And the last thing is adoption, right? Do we get to see these big whales come in? Do we get to see the even bigger whales, which are the asset owners, endowments of the world, come in as well? And how do the use cases that are, you know, kind of developing and blossoming in front of us every day start to develop and capture real share from incumbents, right, in their own industry? So a few things to look out for, and a few things that I think will help further develop the digital asset ecosystem. But it's all the groundwork, I think, is laid for some of that traction to start picking up.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a lot of power there. You know, we start saying and kind of seeing what would the price of Bitcoin look like if maybe 1% of some of these endowment funds or 2% or 3%, you know, what would it look like if just a fraction of a percent? We're not saying anything unrealistic. You know, we're not saying 20, we're not saying 50, we're not saying the whole world is going to be buying Bitcoin and that's the next one world currency, you know, but what would the price of Bitcoin look like if only a couple percent, maybe 1 to 5% was put into Bitcoin? You know, maybe a fraction of that put into Ethereum. What would that do? And the answer is it would cause astronomical growth. That would cause well into the six-figure Bitcoin range. It would push Bitcoin into the five, or sorry, it would put Bitcoin into six figures, Ethereum into five figures. And it's crazy doing the math to see what this could do.
Yeah. And that's why you're seeing all sorts of projections out in the market, right? And you're seeing anything from hundreds of thousands per coin all the way to millions per coin. And the truth is likely to be somewhere in the middle, right? The point being that, like, I think all the projections are kind of signaling up and to the right, which is what you like to see when you're thinking about these things for the long term.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we like to see. Who knows the exact answer, right? No one has the crystal ball to find out. But I like what you said in that all the predictions are up and to the right. There's no one saying, hey, things are going to go down, we're going to go backwards. There's no predictions like that, or at least very few, it feels like, these days. And that's all good things. The kind of general consensus here, no matter who you're asking that has these ETFs or is plugged into the crypto space, they're saying, hey, things are looking positive. When we look at the bigger picture, we're not worried about what's going to happen short term. But when we zoom out, we see things appreciating over time.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what you want to see, right? When you're making an allocation decision for these products, especially if you're a buy and hold investor, you know, you can kind of take that benefit of, you know, allocating towards a specific strategy and kind of setting and forgetting it, right? And ultimately, at some point, things may change and you can reassess. But the way that I invest personally and the way that I talk to our clients is, you know, set your vision for the future and invest according to what that vision is. And that gives you a little bit more peace in the day-to-day.
I agree. Well, before we let you go, you know, I've got to ask, you talk to all sorts of leaders in the TradFi space. You're very well connected and plugged in. Like, what is everyone's view of crypto? What's the general consensus that you're hearing in the TradFi space right now?
It's funny. It depends on who you ask. The answer could be a little bit different. I think, look, it's become so big that it's impossible to ignore, and it's definitely here to stay. And I think there's a broad-based acknowledgement of that fact. Now, when I talk to some RIA clients or to some financial advisors, a lot of them will say, oh, actually, I don't know anything about Bitcoin, but, you know, my clients want it. And so I need to go out there and learn about it and educate myself, because if end investors are asking for it in their advice portfolios, that means financial advisors need to learn about it, which means the home offices need to learn about it, which means kind of the whole wealth management ecosystem is going to be better informed. And so I think we're firmly on that path of like strong education. And I think TradFi's view is very much so that, like, now there's nothing to do, the cat's out of the bag. And this is something we need to your point earlier, coexist with.
It's a great answer. Well, Federico, we really appreciate you hopping on here with us. I know the audience appreciates it as well. You know, where can people get plugged in? Maybe they're hearing about Bitcoin and Ethereum ETFs for the first time. They're interested. You know, where can they follow you and where can they get involved?
Yes, we have tons of promotional educational content on our website, 21shares.com. You can follow me at Fede Brocate on X. And we're constantly publishing thought pieces, research. We have a off-the-shelf content that's great to learn about the space if you're newer, and to learn about how some of our products operate. So I would encourage you to sign up for some of those newsletters.
Perfect. Well, hey, we really appreciate you hopping on here, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's a pleasure.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.